Welcome to Crypto Talk Radio, the podcast for everyday investors like you. Visit us on the web at cryptotalkradio.net. And now, here's your host, Leister.
Thank you for that, Bailey, and welcome everybody out there on Crypto Talk Radio, found at cryptotalkradio.net. You've heard of jalopies and the noise they make. Let me introduce my Rocket 88, although my car is nowhere close to a Rocket 88. It does not have one wing in the back, does not go and cruising along the highways, but it's a pretty good car for what it is. I think it's a great car. I got a quick snippet for you, and this is to refresh on things I said before. At CryptoTalkRadio.net, if you're new, by the way, welcome. My name is Leister, and I'm refreshing for everybody who's not new, who heard me say the show will move to once a week for the foreseeable future. I may shift back. I haven't decided yet. But for the foreseeable future, shifting to once per week, the goal being that we want to get back into the out-of-cycle updates that we started doing way back when the show started, almost 3 years ago now. We were doing out-of-cycle updates, and I stopped doing it because we were doing the two per week episodes on the main show. So we're going to do the once per week and kind of play it by ear, see how that goes, but get back into the out-of-cycle updates with, the intent being that we'll give more information that is pertinent and relevant, even if it's not necessarily up-to-date, up-to-the-minute, because we don't want to be, we're not a news service, right? We just want to cover what we think is worth your time. So we're going to try that, see how that works. Second, my room is renegotiated. It was painful. I'm still sore, but the room's renegotiated. What that means is that the desk I'm recording on now faces the studio that was intended for recording video. So we're working to get back on video. The lease I'm in expires in 3 months, which really sucks. I'm working with the bank to see if we can get approval for financing. Then I got to get one of these slack-jawed realtors to call me back on a home so I can make a deal. I'm really motivated to do that. So that's another reason I'm doing the once a week for now, because time's going to start being a constraint. I'm going to have to chase that down. My plates on the car. So I had put those, there's screws for the license plates that are for keeping them from getting stolen, because that was a big thing in certain states. So I put those on the plates because where I was in Nevada, it's Nevada, right? It's crime-ridden bullshit. So I had done that. Well, now the little wrench that I used to get it off, I put it somewhere, and I don't know where I put it. I thought the one that I had was that wrench, and it's not. So now I got to track down the security wrench because I'm not going to be able to swap the plates if I can't find it. So I got to see if it's, I might have put it in the other car or I put it in the toolbox. If it's in the toolbox, I'm going to be searching forever because I have crazy amounts of tools. So I'm not looking forward to that, but I am going to be working to get the video set up, doing some dry runs, make sure it's clean. And if everything's good, we'll be solid. And then I got to figure out the schedule for getting back on the video side. And of course, our out of cycle updates will broadcast through all platforms, including the podcast, as well as to YouTube, Facebook, BitChute, Odyssey, Rumble, etc. Let's toss some cryptocurrency and see where we can figure this stuff out. Coindesk.com. Let's zoom out to the month chart. And I'm going to start with Ethereum. And I'm starting with Ethereum for no other reason than Bitcoin's interesting. And I want to leave it for last. I save the best for last. So on Ethereum, then major dip down again, dropped as low down very most recently as like $3,400. Currently at just shy of $3,600. So a low within the last day of $3,500. To just shy of $3,700. So I think with Ethereum in particular, what's really happening, because I was looking at some of the buy pressure across the board, and I noticed that there's certainly buy pressure on like Base, the garbage chain from Coinbase. There's still pressure on Solana for sure. There's a little bit of pressure on Avalanche. So there's certainly buy pressure. The total market cap's $2.6 trillion as I record it. So the buy pressure is there, but I think catfishing is continuing. I think you have a bunch of people who are still going to these different chains, finding mean garbage to buy into and entice other people to get into them, is what I speculate's happened. So when I looked at Ethereum's graph, I didn't see that people were done with it, simply that they were possibly taking money out of it, profit money out of it, and going to other garbage tokens to, you know, pump and dump those. That was my read of it. When I cross-referenced it then against Bitcoin, Bitcoin had a low, and this is the last 24 hours, a low of 69.3, a high of 71.6-ish, hovering around $70,000 mark, so much more spread than Ethereum did, but it's upward trend. It doesn't have the same dip that Ethereum did, which told me that there's still profit opportunities happening on the Bitcoin side and profit taking, which could contribute to money moving to the other chains and the other garbage tokens that are out there. So the sentiment is still generally bullish, although what I did see, of course, we're not at halving yet, but what I did see is that, you know, numbers-wise, Bitcoin and BNB, those two are the only ones that got back close to what they were during the last run. Ethereum's nowhere close to it. Ethereum got as high as, what, $4,800? So it's nowhere close to what it was. So it's got a ways to go up is the point. When halving hits, we got to see what that does to price movement overall. But across the span, you know, if I look at Solana, for example, it's running up. It's close to $200 per. Dogecoin's going up every recently. It's close to 19 cents. Dog with hat, that garbage still keeps climbing. It has one of the greatest gains in the last week or so. Near protocol, significant. Shibs, decently significant. Avalanche. So I guess what I'm saying is the core coins can still never steer you wrong, number one. Number two, there are certain key projects that are standing the test of time with this run. And if you look at the ones that are consistently green, there's a strong pattern to them. They are the blockchain, you know, coins, the ones that drive the gas. They're the ones that stay consistently green. They may have the dips occasionally if Bitcoin dips, but by and large, they stay up and they run. So that's where the profit really can be. And again, BNB is the only one that even got anywhere close to what its strong potential could be. I mean, you look at Phantom, about a dollar. I think its height was like $2, $3. But in terms of overall, I mean, BNB, what was it, down to like $100 or something, even lower when crypto crashed earlier. So it had an amazing recovery. Remember, BNB has burns. BNB is of the things that are keeping it in the positive. So I'm saying, from my perspective, my lens, I think cryptocurrency is still positive and going up. Where we go from here is going to be a matter of time. Time has to pass before we really see the fruits of what we're experiencing in this current kind of middle ground stage. But I do think big picture, when I say big picture, I'm talking long term, two years, 3 years, 5 years. Big picture, I do think we've got one of the a really amazing run ahead of us. It's going to take the patience of people to realize it. Some people are simply not going to be patient about it, though. They're going to say, screw it. Those people are going to lose out. And some may be okay losing out. And hey, if you're one that's saying, you know, screw this crypto thing, brother, I support that because I know it's not for everybody. It can be frustrating not having predictable price movement. Have you heard of Jasmine? I looked at Jasmine and I had avoided Jasmine. Let's call this my underdog coverage today. I had avoided Jasmine, and the reason I avoided Jasmine is that Del Rugpull, aka Del Crypto, was shilling it to the high hell for at a point, just heavily shilling. It did a pump and dump, so I ignored it. It was getting too much hype. It gets some hype, but nowhere near what it did before. It's really one of those kind of cult following type hypes. It doesn't have the same strength backing that it once did. That's not a bad thing. I'm just calling out to attention. It's nowhere near what it was. So Jasmine is based out of Japan, and they were trying to create a technology-based cryptocurrency. So it's based on, if you think of, you know, your smart lighting, if you have smart lighting, or smart garage, if you have a garage that you can control on your mobile phone or something, anything that is a smartphone, smart app driven something. This is referred to in technology as the Internet of Things. It's the idea that you can have some sort of a device that is connected and you can control it, and you basically using the internet to power it. Scheduled sprinklers or all these different things that are designed to enhance our lives. Internet of Things, that's what that's what they propose to be backing. They're saying that we want to be the Internet of Things, but for cryptocurrency supporting this. using blockchain technologies. And so it's always had kind of this backing sentiment of future potential to it, that something's going to be made of this and it's going to be the next thing, the next big thing. And Japan has largely been at the forefront of what that means. Recently, news came out that Panasonic, which Panasonic, of course, is a very well-known company, Panasonic has a smaller arm to it called Advanced Technologies. And what they want to do is build a platform around personal data. The personal data, what the thought is that you should have control to access to your personal information in a kind of locker concept. The locker concept is that you can provide keys to your personal information by way of this locker. Where could this be used? What's a potential use case? First of all, let me just clarify. The government's not going to use this. They're going to stick with their legacy garbage of making you bring in a physical copy of your birth certificate, or if you're an illegal immigrant, not require it. So this is not going to apply to the government space. It never will. This would only be on the private sector. So right there, it's going to limit its velocity. Internationally, I think this could take off. The analogy could be, as an example, you need to apply for a job. As part of a job application, let's say that they want to go ahead and bring you on. You got it. We're ready to hire you. There's a bunch of things that they need to collect from you. They need your name, they need your address history, your social security number, your birth date, et cetera, and so on. The thought is, well, rather than having to fill out all this paperwork and do all this screening and do all that stuff, what if you could simply provide access to your personal locker securely? They don't get access to the specifics of the data. They get access to unique codes that are provided to just get back to the decision that they're looking for. So as an example, often you'll see for job applications and job screening, they want to know, you know, that you've lived in the same place for more than 2 years or something. Well, that's all numbers, right? So the address history would need to expand past 2 years. If you needed to understand somebody's bank account and you need to understand the amount of money in the bank account meets or exceeds a certain threshold, that's a true or false condition. So you could theoretically query this locker without getting access to the specifics of the money, just to ask the question, does this person have at least $15,000 in the bank? Yes. Okay. Does this person have a criminal record? No. Okay. Does this person have a college degree? Yes. Okay. Right? It's just answers. Answers to the questions they really want. See, today, they go through the details to basically violate your privacy, right? Because if they wanted to know about the college degree, that's a great example. They have to ask you about the school. They have to ask you the type of degree. They have to ask you your start dates, your end dates. And then they contact the school, usually electronically, but they contact the school and they ask the school to verify those sets of information. Well, they already have the data. They already have breached your privacy. The alternate that's being proposed conceptually is rather than violating your privacy, we could simply answer the question for you. You don't need to contact the school. We have that knowledge baked into your locker that we just need to ask the question, does the person have a college degree? Yes. Did the person attend this school? Yes. These are all just simple data points to answer the question. I like it for a different reason. I like it because it gets them down to what they're really trying to do. I went through a situation, this was years ago before I started working myself. Job screening is nowhere near what it used to be. Back in my day, right? So people listening to the show, they're either my age or younger, statistically speaking. So if you're my age-ish or older, you know what I'm about to describe. Way back yonder, it used to be you'd pull out the newspaper, usually the Sunday, and you pull out the want ads, classifieds. And you would look for a job, and it would say something to the effect of, help wanted, we need something, 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 fax your resume to X or email your resume to Y or call us at Z, right? It's simple, simple. So let's say it's a call. You call somebody, yeah, I'm interested in the job. Can you tell me about it? They tell you about it. Can you come in? We do a quick interview. They may or may not ask for a resume, but they really jump to the interview process. Faxing the resume, you fax the resume. Somebody calls you off the resume or email, right? Over time, this started to evolve where they started working to exclude people. So instead of we really want to talk to you, it became we really don't want to talk to you, but we kind of have to hire somebody that we really want, and became discriminatory. Because now You're forced to do it online. And I know some people are like, well, why would you want to do it in paper? I don't. What I want is that I can email the resume. Human looks at the resume and makes a decision. Instead of, well, you got to fill out this application. It's 12 pages long. It asks all the same questions. It's already on the resume. So you're duplicating work, but they still require you to do a resume anyway. If it doesn't meet these certain keywords, the computer will auto-reject you. That's what I don't like. When at the end of the day, the whole point of the application is really answering questions. They want to know that you have, what, 5 years of work history. They want to know whether you have a college degree or not. They want to know whether you live locally or not. These are just simple yes or no answers that could be determined by some sort of a system based on the data. So they don't need to see the data. Now, it's once and done, right? Imagine a world where your work history just gets put in your locker as you work. So the locker becomes your resume with additional data, and it can then answer these questions that are asked as a simple computer exchange of knowledge. Then it drives a decision, then they talk to you. Some people are freaked out about that. It's like, yes, you're taking the human out of the equation. In some cases, that might actually be preferred, because remember, the more humans you have in there, the more bias, unconscious or otherwise, you have. So I like the concept of not having to duplicate the same data from your CV or your resume. I like the concept of getting to the basics of answering the questions so we can get past the nonsense. I am a little bit hesitant about the potential for misuse and the fact that the government's not going to use it because they're the ones who really need it. If we're talking about getting past some of this, think about it. If you move to another state and you're trying to get a driver's license, you got to send a physical copy of your birth certificate every freaking time. They can't just electronically query the birth certificate data from your state because the states don't talk to each other. That's what I'm talking about. The government's not going to use it to really improve theirs. They're the ones that need it. So that's kind of disheartening. But at least it's a step in the right direction, and it's a positive thing for times to come. If you're in WorldCoin, WorldCoin is the garbage I talked about some time ago. If you're in WorldCoin, you may have seen some price dips. The price dips are because Portugal, Portugueses, Portugal recently put a ban, a three-month ban on data collection shortly following what Spain did, banning the collection of biometric data for 3 months. It applies because they want to do an investigation of what's going on. They're basically saying you're not going to be scanning people's eyes. You're not going to be scanning people's face. That's the scope. So they don't care about fingerprints and that. They care about your eyes and da-da-da. The reasoning behind this is, number one, they're not doing any sort of age vetting or verification. So they're not vetting that somebody is truly 18 or older, number one. Number two, GDPR. If you don't know about GDPR, GDPR includes, it's a regulatory framework that includes protection of your information. And you have right of refusal. You can say, no, you're not going to do this. So you may go to different websites and they'll have some sort of a banner that says you can opt out of XYZ. That was driven by GDPR. Even if you're not overseas and you're in the United States, it's easier for companies to simply apply the standard across the board. So we all get that same prompt. Cookies, same thing, where you can opt out of optional cookies. And by the way, I do recommend you do so. And tracking cookies and things, that all came and originated because of the push for GDPR. GDPR is part of the reason that they're stepping in, saying there's also protections in this regulatory framework around the use of biometric data, around data collection from minors, et cetera, and so on. So again, it's only a three-month deal, so it's not a complete ban. It's only for 3 months during the investigatory process so that they can, you know, figure out exactly what this thing is. Now, I have my own mixed feelings on this because I feel that this ban should have been implemented before they were allowed to launch the damn thing and put those orbs all over the world. Regardless, it is what it is. So if you're in WorldCoin, you may have seen some negative price movement. This is why. It's because at the end of the day, the WorldCoin business, they're just rushing it out. They didn't wait for any sort of regulatory acceptance. They just kind of, it's kind of just do it and accept apology or, you know, issue apology later. That's basically what they're doing, which is why I was hesitant about it, because I expected something was going to happen about this. Now, WorldCoin has issued appeals on the Spain one that happened way, this is back in the beginning of March, as well as this recent one, because they're specifying, hey, look, what's the legality? What grounds can they do this? They can't. They have every ground to do that because of GDPR. That's the whole point of GDPR. The whole point of it is protection of people's information. So WorldCoin, they had the burden of the standard, right? The burden. They had to prove that they were protecting people's information. They can't just say it. They have to prove it. There was no age verification process that was found. That's what triggered the whole business. They went after the age standard when they were going after these guys. There's nothing in there that says we verify age, we verify any of that, because they don't collect any additional information around this. And then they were handing out free tokens. And then, of course, that's the incentive. So it's kind of like honeypot in a way. It's not, but I'm saying kind of. You're enticing them with money in exchange for this information that we know you're going to turn around and resell. That's what's driving that whole business. Now, I'm going to close out by saying a couple of different things. I think I said before that cryptocurrency is a different spot now. It's nowhere close to what it was before. It's a way different world. It's a way different feeling. And there's a lot of positives. There's also a lot of negatives. The one constant that is truly there, we see that at the end of the day, cryptocurrency is really now around trending. It's around things that trend. It's around things that they're trending. They are popular for whatever period of time. They're whatever. I think there's a downside to focusing on this, where you're just taking a trend and kind of running with it. I understand why they are doing it, but I don't agree. So the reason I'm closing with this is because of something that was brought to my attention very most recently, Cardano Girls. If you're not on social media, you have no idea what that is. If you are on social media, you may still not know what it is. So I've been unreasonably bullish on Cardano, and I can't explain why. It was just a thing. Now, I did sell all my, you know, Cardano, but when I saw this garbage, I think Cardano's big situation was everybody says their leader is an idiot. That's it. It's like there's something here, but the guy who runs it's a blistering idiot. This Cardano Girls business is allegedly, I don't know deep, but allegedly something where it's not a professional thing. It is just a bunch of, you know, bullish people. I don't know. Coming from a shiller, and it's a bunch of girls, I would argue the vast majority are not attractive, and they're talking about random crap, like, you know, something about saving money for food and something about coffee and something, just a bunch of crap. And it's ostensibly trying to poke fun at the lack of women in cryptocurrency and that more women are getting in cryptocurrency and an attempt to appeal to those girls. I don't see that that's going to be effective. I don't see that it's going to work. And I think it's going to have the negative effect and the opposite effect. So part of the problem with I'm a fan of using girls to market. I'm a fan of this, but not for Cardano and not even generally for cryptocurrency because of the kind of people that we've enticed into cryptocurrency, the so-called crypto bros. The default ask of the vast majority of them is going to be something of a rated R or worse response from those people. So you already have, I covered on a past episode way back where there were some girls who were using NFTs. They're basically X-rated NFTs. You've got, what is that one? Taboo, the Taboo token. So there's already precedent for it. And in my mind, you're just simply going to tell people that that's what you're doing with Cardano, which has historically been treated as more serious than that. That's not saying that girls can't be serious. I'm saying that the way this came across was kids. It was childish. And we're talking, these were not young girls either, by the way. They're not young girls. Some of them were, but by and large, they were not young girls. So I guess my point is, I didn't understand what the audience was for what I saw. It seemed like a desperation thing. It seemed like just something, well, let's just do something for the cool kids instead of how about we sell what business value Cardano can have to a mainstream audience using a diverse set of actors and actresses instead of just a bunch of girls, one of which under a sheet. Like it was, I don't want to say offensive because that's extreme. I don't want to say disgusting because it's extreme. I can't even say it was the worst thing I've seen because trust me, it's not. It didn't fit. It didn't fit the message and the image that I think Cardano needed to have. And I was struggling to think of another cryptocurrency where such a thing would have possibly been a good fit. Maybe Axie Infinity, right? Because, you know, girls, gaming, okay, I can maybe sell that. SHIB, no, not really. Doge, hell no, no, no. You know, Avalanche, no. Decentraland, yeah. You know, gaming, once again. Other than that, I was struggling. I'm like, who is the target, the real target for this crap? So I guess the message, there's no call to action, but the message on this, I guess the kids like to say cringe. That's a good word for it. It was cringe. It was, I understand the desperation. Cardano has sucked at selling the mainstream. Mine is, this ain't the way to do it. And, you know, if you want to get this thing going, there's better ways to have done that than what I saw. And I think it really goes around, well, what do you do? Or what will you do? Because right now you haven't done anything. And the level of silence, I think, hurts the project more than what they did. And I stress, I can't say that Cardano, the project, supported that or sponsored it or any of that. I know an influencer said something, did it, they led it. But were they initiated by the project team? I can't say that for sure. Cryptocurrency in general suffers from marketing. They all suck at it. And I understand. But I think this, again, this was not the worst I've seen, but it was up there. I was so taken aback by it. I was so taken aback by it. Like, you think about Doge. Even Doge comes across as more relatable to a mainstream than this crap. Doge, which doesn't do anything. Anyway, I struggle, you know? I struggle. I don't trade cryptocurrency to get rich. That's not why. I trade it because I'm intrigued. But this doesn't intrigue me. This doesn't interest me. This isn't what I want to see. I don't want to see this crap. I don't want to see kids that say the word jeet, say the word keck and all that crap. I don't want to see telescam. I don't want to see that. I want to see serious invest. Could you imagine Tesla stock and they just put a bunch of girls up there talking about random garbage like coffee and crap? No, it's not right. Paris Hilton's project was not this corny. Paris, almost cussed, Paris freaking Hilton's stuff. She has NFTs and stuff. I did an episode of her a while ago. Her stuff wasn't this cringe. Paris freaking Hilton wasn't this cringe. That's how you know we've lost the plot. When you've even got Paris Hilton coming across as more credible than what this is doing for a project that should be more than what it is. Cardano should be more than what it is. I'm really disgusted. I'm done talking about that. So I'm also, just so people know, I've learned more about price impact. This is my 101 closure. So price impact is where the transaction you do, buy or sell, is going to impact the price, either up or down. So if I'm selling, it's probably going to impact the price down. If I'm buying, it's going to impact the price up. Price impact comes when the amount of transaction exceeds what the pool can tolerate without a shift in the price in order to, you know, rebalance itself. Essentially, that's what we're talking. There's a couple of projects that I was in where I was able to influence the price, and it's kind of fun. You know, it's like puppets on a string. You know, you're doing things that influence the price of the project. And there's one that I'm doing right now, And it's interesting. You know, it's like me. It's me against the Bears, baby. Like these guys and get ladies, whatever. They're committed to selling, but they don't have enough supply to offset my purchases. So I've just been buying and buying and buying. I'm at the point now that I hold a quarter of supply, total supply. But here's the trick. This is a Solana token. On the Solana chain, anybody can actually burn tokens. And by burn, I don't mean like Ethereum BNB where you just transfer it to a dead address. I'm talking burn, true burn, where it destroys the tokens, takes them out of, they don't exist. Anybody can do that on a Solana chain. In fact, it's the only way that you can burn is to destroy tokens. So now I've done buys and buys and buys, and I get to a point, and then I'll do a burn of a little bit and a little bit. So I've already burned essentially a fifth of the supply myself. And I'm watching the graph and I'm raising the floor because I have, you know, at this point a quarter, but it was a fifth, but now it's a quarter because of constraint. And then the liquidity pool has what used to be a third, but now it's almost half. Like it's, and so now I'm just watching the floor go up. So as these jokers keep selling, their sales aren't having nearly as much impact, but my buy brings the candle right back up to the top. It's fun. It's fun watching this because my hope is I can entice, because it's going to show up on like Dex Screener and, you know, all these other scanners. My hope is I can entice, okay, this guy just stays in the green. He won't give up. And if I can cause enough of a run, then it'll, you know, kick and go on its own. And I can gradually sell out without killing the project. Right. That's and recoup my investments. That's what I hope to do. And then if I can master doing that, I'm going to start doing that on Solana projects because now I can burn. So now I can influence the supply and, you know, manipulate the floor of it and possibly help some of these projects who otherwise suck at what they're doing. But there's nothing fundamentally wrong with it. It's just that maybe they didn't do good marketing. Maybe they didn't heavily shill it, whatever, and help them maybe go on a run and then make a little money on the side. So that's where I'm having fun with it while I ignore that garbage with the Cardano girls as I'm over here influencing prices of tokens by burning, actually destroying token supply and having a good time doing it and watching the graph completely blow up every time I do a trade. This is fun. This is really fun. This is what I wish we had during the 2021 with this. That's why I wish Ethereum had that function where we could affect the token supply. Because, geez, you think so many projects that just had way too many, you know, quadrillions or whatever, and we could have helped those projects succeed. You know, there's still projects out there now that have too much supply, and we could help them succeed if they had a true burn, not the transfer to dead. I'm talking a true destruction. It's fun. So that's what I'm doing. Meanwhile, I'm going to go and get back on this Diophil Chronicle and relax a little bit. Take care. Be safe. Don't gamble, please.